Hi, and welcome to the fifth episode of the French Tech Asia Pacific podcast, the show on which we explore the French entrepreneurial ecosystem here in Asia Pacific. Recorded in the sunny city state of Singapore, this show is brought to you by myself, your host for this episode, Nikolai Grunweg, and Bill Poorman, who is backstage on this one. Before we get started with today's episode, I have some announcements to make. First, I'd like to draw your attention to a fantastic event taking place here in Singapore tonight. That is on Thursday, the 4th of April, the day that this episode is released. Tonight will be the first installment of what promises to be a series of events. An event in which tech trade chambers and tech communities from multiple countries are coming together to discuss how to accelerate your business in Southeast Asia. France will, of course, be represented, with French Tech Singapore being a co-organizer, but so will the Netherlands, Germany, Australia, and Israel. So if this sounds like it might be of interest to you, there's still time to check it out and sign up. For more information, look on either the website of French Tech Singapore, frenchtech.sg, or search for Accelerating Your Business in Southeast Asia directly on Eventbrite. Now, a word of caution, limited seating is available, so if you can't get in, better luck next time. Our second announcement for today is about a company and member of our extended French Tech family called Agorize. Founded in 2011 in Paris, this startup for open innovation challenges proposes an online platform that has quickly expanded into Asia. They're now based in Hong Kong, Singapore, and Tokyo. As some of you might know, there's a big need in Asian companies for transformation and agility in order to adapt to the ever faster pace of innovation here, and Agorize meets that need by enabling their clients to launch hackathons and innovation challenges directly on their platform. Now, the big news is that they've just raised $14.6 million to accelerate their growth, notably here in Asia Pacific. Look out for an upcoming episode in which we sit down and talk to the Agorize Asia CEO, Mathieu Toulmont, to explore the impressive growth of this French startup and to get up close and personal with open innovation. But enough of this, let's get on with today's episode. Today we talk to Gilles Langourieux, CEO and founder of Virtuous, one of the world's leading game development companies and number one solution provider for the games industry. Virtuous employs over 1,500 staff worldwide, and as a part of their global growth, they've recently moved their headquarters from China to Singapore. And that's where we met with Gilles, not long after they closed a $15 million funding round to finance their next phase of growth and international expansion. Now, if you like video games, or movies for that matter, you've probably seen some of Virtuous' work. They've contributed to game titles such as Dark Souls, Far Cry, and Call of Duty Black Ops, but also to movies such as Rango or Star Wars The Force Awakens. We talked to Gilles about how he grew his company, which he founded in 2004 in China, and we explore the difficulties of being a foreign entrepreneur on the mainland Chinese market, and learn how that market has changed over the last 15 years. Gilles generously taps into his own experience to give advice to us, his fellow entrepreneurs, some of whom are perhaps considering expanding into China, and he warns us about the two major challenges that await there: unprecedented competitive pressure and massive scale. I'm very excited about this episode, and it's my pleasure to introduce Gilles Langourieux, CEO and founder of Virtuous.
Hello, my name is Gilles Langourieux. I'm the CEO of Virtuous, which is now one of the largest independent game developers, headquartered out of Singapore and with studios essentially in Asia, but also in Europe. I started working in games for a small French company called Ubisoft in 1995. At the time, Ubisoft was a distributor of games, and its founders wanted to start their own studio and become creators of their own games. I was one of the first project managers that they hired in 95 when they started the French studio. Ubisoft was listed in 96. With the money that we raised, we wanted to open large studios outside of France. because I spoke English, I was sent to China to try to open a large studio for Ubisoft in China in 1997, which is what we did. We were, I think, the first Western company to try to open a game studio in China at the time. And within 3 years, we had opened two studios, one in Shanghai, another one in Beijing. And we were employing more than 300 people and giving them the chance, the opportunity to work on international games. So as such, we were really the first company to give Chinese the opportunity to develop AAA international games. So this was a key milestone in my career. I was in China from 1997 to 2000 for Ubisoft. I returned to France, where I took on different responsibilities at Ubisoft. I managed their online business until 2004. And in 2004, my wife was given the opportunity by her company to go back to China and run their subsidiary in China. So she had followed me in 97, when I moved to China for Ubisoft. And we thought, okay, this is your turn. You take this opportunity and I'll leave Ubisoft and I'll follow you. So I moved back to China in 2004 as an expat's husband, if you like. And to occupy myself, I looked at different opportunities and ended up with this idea of setting up Virtuos. Because at the time, there was a big opportunity in helping larger studios, larger game publishers, produce bigger games for the new generation of consoles. In 2004, the PlayStation 3, the Xbox 360 were on the horizon, and they were 10 times more powerful than the previous generation of consoles. So it meant that producing games for these platforms would be 2 to 3 times more expensive if you didn't change your production method. This is where I saw an opportunity, and this is why I started Virtuos.
So what does Virtuos do exactly?
So we help essentially game companies, but also some movie companies, solve the problem of how to build bigger games, or in some cases, bigger movies, and how to take the games to more platforms. We have two divisions, an art division and a game division. In the art division, we produce 3D art assets, characters, backgrounds, animations, which are used in the games or in some famous movies. I'll give you a few examples in a minute. And in our game division, we develop entire games. We do adaptations, so we take all the games and bring them to the newer platforms. For example, we remastered the Final Fantasy X and 12 from the original PlayStation 2 to the PlayStation 3, and then the PlayStation 4, and now the Xbox and the Switch. Or we produce sequels and in some cases new games based on other IPs. In the art division, so we employ over 1,000 3D artists, and the type of techniques that they use to produce 3D assets for games are actually pretty similar to what special effects companies use for movies. So we've had a relationship with the oldest and the best known movie effects company called ILM, which is George Lucas, the company set up by George Lucas when he created Star Wars. And we've been working with them for nearly 10 years now. And we work on almost every movie that they work on to give them large 3D assets or digital doubles. For example, in The Force Awakens, Star Wars The Force Awakens, when Harrison Ford gets pushed in the void by his son, it's not the actor or a stunt actor doing the stunt. It's a digital double. It's a virtual 3D character produced by our studio in Vietnam, Sparks, which is doing that.
And walking into the office here today, I saw a lot of those titles displayed at the entrance, some of which are very well known, like you just mentioned. I noticed that all of them were English titles, though.
We didn't place enough titles on these shelves. You know, we worked on over 1,000 titles. Over 30% of our business is done in Asia. And so you should have major Korean titles in there. You should have major Japanese titles, as well as many titles from NetEase, Kingsoft, Tencent in China. We're truly a global business.
Okay. You've done over 1,000 projects, you said. Is there any one particular project that you were really excited about that stands out?
Well, working on Star Wars The Force Awakens was a major milestone. Contributing thousands of 3D assets to another animated feature movie produced by ILM, Rango, which won the Oscar in 2013. Contributing to an Oscar-winning movie, this was a big one. And then every year we work more or less on 5 out of the top 10 games. So, for example, this year we contributed to the latest Call of Duty, the latest Far Cry, the latest Monster Hunter World. Every year, our teams are extremely proud of the big AAA tentpole titles that we've had a chance to work on. So there were two changes. First, an increase in the power, the capabilities of the machines. Second, many studios in our industry had reached a certain maturity. You know, industry was started very much as a garage industry. You know, a couple of people in their bedroom or in their garage building games. And the way we were building games, we were building the tools at the same time as we were creating the story, creating the gameplay. It was a very messy process. And it's only in the 2000 that companies like Ubisoft started to have a more mature process, which clearly separated pre-production from production. So the possibility of external development or distributed development became a reality around that time frame. At Ubisoft, we had good success doing distributed development between our studio in France, our studio in Canada, which was set up at the same time as the Chinese studios, and our studios in China. So we knew how to make distributed development work inside the same group. What I did with Virtuos was, inspired by this success, offer this possibility to all the major game studios around the world.
So that was 15 years ago, right?
This was end of 2004, beginning of 2005.
2004. So you were massively successful in China. I think when you talk to entrepreneurs about starting a business in Asia or expanding into Asia, China is often cited as the most difficult market, even though there is obviously an enormous potential. What's it like being an entrepreneur in China?
So what it's like today and what it was like in 2004, 2005 is probably a bit different. 2004, 2005, we were still in the years of China opening up to the world. China being on a path of really fast growth, you know, 9 to 10% per year for the whole country. China discovering the internet. And so these were years where the country was very welcoming for entrepreneurs, foreign entrepreneurs in particular, and when you had a lot of people from France, the UK, the US, building new businesses there. China today is probably less open to foreign entrepreneurs. Chinese companies have been extremely successful. The Chinese government has policies which are less open because they're putting a lot of focus on made in China first. And a lot of the quick wins have already been won. What I mean by that is areas where no Chinese company was already is already successful or established, there are much fewer of them. To make the analogy with my own business, when I said, okay, let's build a game company which is going to serve a lot of game clients across the world, I was probably one of the first foreigners to do this. And one of the first entrepreneurs, period, to do this. If somebody came into China today wanting to do this, he would be faced with competition from dozens of Chinese entrepreneurs who have also seen the same opportunity, have already established game studios serving global clients. And what has happened in our industry has happened in most industries today. So this combination of Chinese entrepreneurs already being successful in most domains, and the government having a less open policy makes it more difficult terrain, I think, for entrepreneurs.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely what I've been hearing from a lot of people. Like it's matured a lot, right? The growth is has slowed down, obviously, and it's like they feel they don't need foreigners, right? Exactly like you say.
So there's also something else which has changed. 15 years ago, the model of development was focused a lot on China exporting to the rest of the world.
Right.
And that model has now shifted towards looking for growth on the internal market, on local market first. So when you're aiming at exporting more, working with foreigners to have access to the international markets is something pretty natural. When you're focusing on the local market, foreigners have less to offer. And so it's a different mindset.
And the local market is very big, right? Yeah, so I mean, there's plenty of opportunity there.
So extremely big, and so big that in order to succeed on the local market, you'd better be a giant. If you're not a giant, you might lack the funds or the team size to successfully compete on such a large market. If you make the analogy with Singapore, where we're currently located, I think the Singapore market, or some of the countries around Singapore, are easier to approach than the Chinese market because they're on a more human scale. You can crisscross all of Singapore distribution network within a day. It's the size of one big city in China. So if you're an independent entrepreneur trying to go after the Singapore market, it's more reasonable than saying, oh, I'm going to go after China.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that can actually be achieved, that can be done just by
With the limited resources that you have when you're starting.
Yeah.
Once you've had initial success, then of course you can think about expanding quickly. But the scale in China is certainly a huge obstacle.
Even though that you might hit a certain growth barrier, right? In a country like Singapore, once you've managed to deploy on the local market and you want to make that jump into the region, for example, or into the world, could one argue that in China, just because of the sheer scale, if you get a foothold, if you get traction, that it's easier to keep shooting up?
Well, that's only true if you've got the resources.
Right.
And something that I've seen with independent entrepreneurs, but also with medium-sized companies, and when I say medium-sized, I mean companies that are generating $1 or $2 billion instead of, you know, 50 or 100 billion. Yeah. Well, $1 or $2 billion companies do not have the scale to be successful in China in many industries. Of course, there are exceptions, but in many industries, they're just too small. because they can't cover the whole territory where their Chinese competitors will be able to cover the 300 or 500 cities that have more than a million people, as an example.
Right, yeah. Might they also be at a disadvantage to acquire VC funding, or is that not so much an issue?
Of course. Here, I think we're back talking about entrepreneurs rather than mid-sized companies. Yeah. So if you're an entrepreneur, foreign entrepreneur in China, you are at a disadvantage to have access to any kind of funding, whether it's VC or banking. We were fortunate at Virtuos to probably because of the reputation I had acquired successfully building studios for Ubisoft back in the days, that helped us have access to VC funding. And we did have, within a year of starting the company, Chinese funds coming to us and saying, hey, you know, we'd like to work with you and help you. And we ended up partnering with Legend Capital, which is related to the Lenovo group and was and still is today one of the biggest VC funds for tech in the country. I think we were the first time that they invested in foreign entrepreneur, and there are still very few examples like that. So my example shows it's possible, but it's also very rare.
It's very rare, and it hasn't gotten any easier in recent years.
Probably not,
yeah.
The main message I have for my fellow entrepreneurs is, if they're interested in China, they have to be extremely thorough with their due diligence and really understand what they're getting into and weigh their strength very carefully. Because the two main problems you face in that country are, first, the Chinese entrepreneurs are the best in the world, and there are many, many of them. So you're faced with the probably the strongest competitive pressure you'll see anywhere. And second, the scale of this country is really scary. So it requires a lot of cash and a lot of people if you want to properly expand on the local market. There are a lot of niches. There are a lot of opportunities still in that country, but you need to be very mindful of these two challenges. Otherwise, you're going to waste a lot of time.
To bring this back to Virtuos, so you've recently moved to Singapore.
Yes, so we started the company 15 years ago in China. We have expanded initially in China. We started in Shanghai, where we now have 450 people building games in our first studio. We expanded to Chengdu, where we now have 600 game developers. And then we expanded to Xi'an in the north, the former capital of China. You know, they're famous the terracotta army. But it's also a high-tech city. And in Xi'an, we have 200 staff. So we have more than 1,000 people in China. But in the last 5 years, we've grown faster outside of China than in China. We've grown in Vietnam, where we acquired a company. We've grown in France, where we've grown our Paris studio. And we've also acquired a studio in Ireland, in Dublin. So we have already become a more international company. And the trend, because of how games are run as a service now, the trend is for us to build studios closer to our clients. Our clients are in North America, in Europe, in Korea, in Japan, also in China. But the majority are outside China. Because of that, we're going to have more growth outside of China in the next 5 years. So we needed to have a headquarter outside of China to really set ourselves up as a global company. This is reason number one why we decided to move the headquarters to Singapore. Reason number two as a foreign entrepreneur in China, even though we had good success, our access to financing was limited. Access to private equity, access to banking was very limited. And that totally changed once we moved to Singapore. We were able to raise over $30 million within a few months of having relocated to Singapore through a combination of private equity and banking financing that would not have been possible if we'd stayed in China.
So that's definitely a big difference, and it makes a very large impact, right, on what you're trying to do for the...
Growth requires resources and financing. If you cut yourself off from that, you limit your growth.
Right. And so what you've set up here in Singapore is also your research headquarters, is that correct?
Yes. What we have here is both a global headquarter and the R&D center. You know that Singapore has been very active in encouraging and funding R&D efforts in a number of high-tech sectors. The media sector is a sector that they're very interested in. Sectors where data, AI, graphics are important are sectors that where Singapore has already developed talent. And this was very interesting to us, the combination of having access to R&D funding and having access to talent in these areas. So we've started this a few months ago. Today, the R&D team is still less than 10 people. So it's a bit early for me to tell you how successful this is going to be. The ambition is to have up to 100 people within the next 5 years. Well, let's meet again in a few years to see how far we've gone on that journey.
And that's it. As always, we'd like to hear from you.
We would like to hear from you. Give us your feedback, please, on what you like or don't like about this podcast. You can look for our social media feeds, or if you would like to email us directly, go to hello@frenchtechpodcast.com.
Also, I've been getting quite a few questions this last week about what our criteria are to get people on the podcast and stuff like that. It's very, very easy, people. If you're part of French Tech somewhere here in Asia, we'd love to talk to you. Right? So if you're a founder, the CEO of a startup, just send us an email to the address that Bill just mentioned, and we'll get back to you ASAP.
Thank you very much for listening, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Bye.